honeycomb.
Well, it's a darn good life, and it's kind of funny how the Lord made the bee, and the bee made the honey, and the honey bee looking for home. And they called it a honeycomb, and they roamed the world, and they gathered all of the honeycomb into one sweet ball, and the honeycomb from a million trips made my baby's lips. Oh, honeycomb, won't you be my baby? Well, a honeycomb be my own. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone. They made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, won't you be my baby? Well, a honeycomb be my own. What a darn good life when you got a wife like honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bee, I'm gonna look all around for a green, green tree. And he made a little tree, and I guess you heard. Walked in, well, he made a little bird, and he waited all around till the end of spring. Again, every note that the birdies sing, and they put them all into one sweet tone. For my honeycomb, oh honeycomb, won't you be my baby?
Kia ora, you're with Safe and Sound, New Zealand's animal rights show, broadcasting from Free FM in Hamilton and played right throughout the country via the Access Radio sector. Cassandra Kyle Aho, and this week we're again on the subject of bees. Last week, Paul Judge interviewed Professor Peter Dearden about threats to the honeybee, and this week I chat with Marion Hussenbucks of the Animal Interfaith Alliance. Listeners may remember I spoke with Marion a couple of months ago about webcam studies of migrating birds that she follows. And today we're chatting about a new book called Bees at Law by Professor Noel Sweeney, who is also a barrister. We'll get on to the interview in just a second, but first I'd like to ask, if you're local in the Waikato, if you've paid a visit yet to Village Organics, the lovely sponsors of our show. It really is a very nice shop, full of healthy and compassionate choices. So please do check it out on Commerce Street, opposite the Frankton Hotel in Hamilton. Let's go now to the interview I recorded earlier with Marion. Welcome back to Safe and Sound, Marion.
Hello, lovely to be back.
So thanks for reviewing Noel Sweeney's book, Bees and the Law. I think he's written other works about animals and the law. Is that right?
Yes, his seminal work on animals and criminal law, which is called Animals in Law, was published in 2013. Mm-hmm. And Dogs of Law, which deals with the consequences of the Dangerous Breeds Act, so-called,
okay.
Was in 2014.
Mm.
He's a visiting professor in animal law also at the University of Winchester.
Right. And there are lots of books, of course, about bees and beekeeping, but not many contemporary works, at least, about bees and the law. Is that correct?
It does indeed. It's a book which is very, very important for anyone who is interested in legal aspects of this sphere of animal advocacy. But his book also examines and explains in detail the legal status and the rights and responsibilities of those who keep and benefit from bees.
We all benefit from bees. So, talking about those little critters now, why do we like them? Is it only the honey, or does it go deeper than that? Speaking personally, I'm really fascinated with the organisation of insects like bees and ants and termites. I think they call it Eusocial, Eusocial. I think that they've got a lot to teach us about the way they go about things.
Yes, but they are rather cute looking in their stripy coats. And they emit a sound which is evocative of summer in a garden, which makes us feel better.
Yeah.
But they live in a structured and interesting community, and of course they play an indispensable role pollinating much of the food we eat. So honey is prized and has been prized in many nations.
You know, one of the things that is the most difficult for me as a vegan is not guzzling down all the honey that I used to.
Quite, yes. But more than that, I suppose, it does go deeper. The bee is a potent symbol which evokes many concepts which are applicable to our human condition, living as they do in a eusocial environment.
Mm.
And one of Noel's chapters is called Searching for the Soul of a Bee, which tells us, it takes us further into the sphere of our relationship with the creature, and indeed all other creatures. It illustrates the manner in which all non-human animals are made subject to our dominion and how the law underpins that relationship.
Yes, this is really the essence of animal rights, isn't it? It's saying we do not own other animals. We have commandeered them, but we have no natural right to own them.
Exactly. Well, that's the way we would think, isn't it, in the animal advocacy movement?
Yes, yes. Lawyers don't necessarily think along those lines, of course. But getting back to Noel Sweeney's book, it's quite a big book, isn't it?
300 pages. It is a big book.
And knowing your attention to detail, Marion, you've read every word very carefully.
Well, the legal aspects are obviously beyond me as a layperson, but he does write very clearly.
One thing that I heard, and I think the book mentions it, that there was a minister for bees, an apiarist minister in Australia back in 1885.
Yes, isn't that innovative? Yes, he introduced the idea of a bee sanctuary on Kangaroo Island, but I'm afraid I don't know whether that came to pass. I suspect it didn't. But as we know, there are lots of other aspects, and I come from Manchester, and the Manchester bee was a symbol of the industrious textile workers who created the wealth of the city. And to take another example, a very different example, under Islamic and Jewish law, bees were unclean.
That's fascinating.
I don't know. No. It's the same as why are pigs unclean?
Yeah.
I don't think we know why. But honey was not unclean. So at the same time, we could despise them in one way and take advantage of them in the other.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And in another example... Sorry, have I interrupted
you? No, go ahead.
Another example of man's ingenuity in finding employment for other animals. I read that the use of the Western honeybee, the bee can sniff out illegal drugs, as they have proved to have an acute ability to respond to the presence of pure cocaine and heroin. So
sniffer bees.
Amazing facts.
Goodness me, isn't that amazing? I wonder if when they're out foraging, whether, you know, if they're actually sniffing out the pollen.
It could be, couldn't it? I've just read recently that sunflowers give off an aura of light as well, which is visible to bees, so they know what they're getting. They can see from a distance or sense from a distance.
But this is a book about bees at law, and I think over the years bees have been subject to litigation. Is that correct?
Much litigation. I suppose, as a layperson, I would say this arises from a fundamental question. Are bees wild or domesticated? The Roman lawyers categorised bees in a classification which we still use in English and Welsh law, and other common law countries, which probably includes New Zealand. Are they ferae naturae or domitae naturae? So are they like companion animals, domesticated animals, or are they wild animals? And the jurist Justinian defined the status of the bee in 529 as bees are wild by nature, and so if a swarm alight on your tree, it is not to be considered yours until you have hived it, any more than the birds which build their nest there. Hence, if it be hived by another, it becomes his property. So it's a complex system, isn't it? Under England and Wales law, where we're greatly concerned about title, who legally owns an object, possession, the actual holding of an object, whether legal or not, and liability, who can be held liably, legally responsible for any act or omission, the free-flying bee, whether wild or hived, makes an especially interesting and complex subject.
Look, I hope the Americans don't hear about this. They're already over-litigated in the States, aren't they? And if they start litigating all our insects, and goodness.
Well, humans litigate everything, don't
they? Yeah, we do. So what are some examples in the book of court cases concerning bees?
Yes. I've got 60 to choose from, so I've picked out a couple.
Oh, my goodness.
Noel describes cases in several jurisdictions. For instance, judges in Kerry and Pattinson in 1939 in England found that the owner of bees who had swarmed onto a neighbour's land lost his rights to the bees, which is a decision which is questioned by Noel Sweeney and other lawyers. Justinian, the Roman lawyer's judicial definition, was referred to in an American court case in 1903 in which bees were alleged to have stung a team of horses on the property of another individual. And the definition of Justinian was adapted to take account of how society uses this creature to our advantage. And this court observed, bees may not be confined like the wild beast. To roam seems to be necessary to their existence. Bees, while generally classed as ferae naturae, are so useful and common as to be all but domesticated. That's interesting, isn't it?
It is. And just to clarify, ferae naturae is naturally wild, isn't it?
Wild bees. That's whereas, right, wild by nature.
Wild by nature. And whereas domatae naturae is have been domesticated.
Hived.
Had been put in hives.
Yes, exactly. But, of course, there are many species of truly wild bees whom nobody claims as their property. And in the United States in 2008, such bees were the subject of legal action. Can you believe it? In Bellumer versus Zilm, the plaintiff tried to take action for negligence and nuisance, having been stung by wild bees on or about Zilm's premises. And this action tied up several courts in many complex arguments.
Goodness me.
That is amazing.
It is.
And if I can mention something which is a present danger to bees, in 1981 in England, in the case of Tutton versus Walter, bees owned by Tutton foraged on a field of oilseed rape belonging to Walton's company. This field was sprayed with pesticides, which the judge accepted were harmful to bees. But the defendant argued that the bees were trespassers on his land, so he was not liable for the 33 colonies killed by the spraying.
Oh, my goodness me. Last week we had a program speaking with Professor Peter Dearden, who was talking about how bees are not faring well, especially in Europe, but worldwide. And this is to do with all this pesticide spraying that we're doing. And he made the point, too, that pesticides are supposed not to be lethal to bees, but you don't have to die and still be affected. In other words, your performance is undermined if you don't feel at all well. And I think there are quite a few bees out there who are not performing their optimum because they've been affected by insecticides.
Exactly. Apparently they might lose the ability to return home and
Exactly.
It is a big worry. And in the European Union there is a temporary ban on neonicotinoids, and we're trying to persuade them to make that a permanent ban. If I could just mention, just while we're still talking about cases, something which is relevant to you in New Zealand. The case of Robbins versus Kennedy and Colomb in 1931, in which great numbers of bees from 70 hives kept by Robbins attacked horses. Apparently, horses and bees do not mix. And two of these horses died, and the plaintiffs themselves were stung. And Robbins tried to use the defence afforded by the Apiaries Act of 1927. He was legally entitled to keep the bees and not under any duty to prevent injury or damage to neighbours. However, on appeal, he was found to be irresponsible in the sighting of the bees on this border, and thus he was negligent.
So a few bee stings is enough to kill a horse. That's interesting too. You're with Sandra Kyle on Safe and Sound, and I'm speaking with Marianne Hassenbachs about Professor Noel Sweeney's new book, Bees at Law. The book also talks about animals themselves having to stand trial and be punished, not necessarily bees, but I think there's been pigs that have had to go into the court and stand in the dock, is that right?
Yes, it is. Over the past 1,000 years worldwide, animals could be arraigned, tried in court and sentenced to death. And Noel vividly describes the case of a sow who suffered this terrible punishment in 1386 in Normandy, having been found guilty of killing a child. Now, one might say, how is this relevant to bees? They were, in fact, subject to the same system. We're going even further back now, Sandra, back to 864. The Council of Worms in Germany decreed that bees who had stung a man to death should be suffocated in the hive.
Of course, we still have something similar these days. A dog who attacks and harms a child or a person will immediately be put down. And getting back to that poor old sow, wouldn't that be interesting if the tables were turned and we were standing in the dock for killing not just one, but millions and millions of sows every single year?
Quite.
An eye for an eye, huh?
It is. The ancient lex talionis could profitably be applied to every being.
Every being. Well, exactly. So, now, you sent me some notes about this, and looking through your notes, I see that there's a quote by Sir William Petty, who was a 17th century scientist and philosopher and economist, and this interests me. In fact, I spoke with Barbara Gardner about this about a year ago. The idea that animals have souls, and he maintained that animal souls seem like the souls of men. Now, I intuitively feel that even insects, you know, those little tiny scraps of life that so easily you can snuff out their very being, but I feel that there's a measure of consciousness there. I often look at a little, you know, those little green praying mantises, and they sort of climb up onto my finger and they look at me and I look back at them. And I can see the being looking back at me. I know it's a, it's a bit of a tricky area, but do you believe that animals have souls, Marion?
Well, it certainly is tricky, isn't it? My first thought is just to wonder, do human animals have souls?
Yes.
But if we have souls, I don't see any reason why our fellow creatures would not either. Mm. Without anthropomorphizing more than is tempting, other animals share so many of our qualities, or qualities that we consider ours, such as loving and caring for their families, interacting with their own kind, and even symbiotically with other species, feeling and showing pleasure, avoiding pain and fearing death. It's natural to me to ascribe what we might term spiritual qualities to them as well.
Yes.
Oh, it's also significant that in the sense that they do not speak our human languages, bees and other creatures are voiceless in our eyes.
Mm.
And Aristotle considered human speech to be all important. Noel quotes, "The gift of speech also evidently proves that a man is a more social animal than the bees or any of the herding cattle. Man is the only animal who enjoys it."
No, parrots talk as well, and birds. Some birds talk. Yeah, I mean, that's speech, but all beings communicate in their own way. Why do we single out speech?
Precisely. Presumably because Aristotle did.
Yeah.
We now know how socially adept other creatures are, how they understand each other by sounds or by non-verbal communication, and in ways that are often far beyond human skills.
Yes, exactly.
If speech, in the sense of clear communication, was the measure by which a distinction could be made between a human and non-human creature, if that is a distinction, it seems nowadays to be dubious. There is no real difference between us in the spiritual sense. So, for me, I would say we might all have souls.
According to Professor Noel Sweeney, are bees in danger?
Well, yes, they currently face great dangers at our hands, from theft of bees in several countries. Bees are being stolen, hives of bees are being stolen. And of course, as we talked earlier about the controversial use of neonicotinoid poisons sprayed on crops, which has either been shown deadly to pollinators or, as you said, causing them not to function in a normal fashion.
I was astounded last week when Professor Peter Dearden said that a recent study has noted that 75% of flying insects have disappeared.
It's frightening, and it's also shameful, isn't it?
It is.
This is what we've done.
It is.
Of course, there could be loss of habitat as well, but that's thanks to
And climate change, maybe, also, as well as the pesticides. So there are a number of things, no doubt, in the mix. But I know that when I was a child, I used to see a lot more bees and butterflies and moths and dragonflies and so on than I do now.
Exactly, yeah. Just as summers in this country seem to be more summery and winters more wintry, this has affected the animals now that the temperatures are different and the differences between seasons are different as well.
Yeah. Now, there's a quote that you mentioned in your notes to me. So, what bees have to tell our world does not need words, only wisdom. What do you think is behind that quote?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we mentioned before about being voiceless, and Noel has said this, and what the bees have to tell us doesn't need words. Words are a human invention, so it's quite possible for us to say, but it's quite possible for us to say a lot in the non-verbal fashion, and we feel we have a mutual understanding with our companion animals, not necessarily by expressing concepts in words, but in a more visceral manner. And I'm sure that beekeepers feel that it's possible, that is possible with their charges. I'm sure many love their bees.
Yes.
Same as we love our companion animals.
Yes.
But as you mentioned, it's also vitally important that we understand the needs and rights of our fellow creatures, whether they're cats and dogs, praying mantises, or bees.
Mm.
Now, to come back to the legal, we often make appeals to governments and the general public to show compassion for our fellow creatures, but I would contend that is not enough. As Noel says, they have a right to justice, and we have the responsibility in the various ways we animal advocates work. We have the responsibility to speak up for that right.
Definitely.
Could I just mention Te Uruwera and Juan Anui River in New Zealand having been granted legal personality?
Yes, that's right. Therefore, bees can as well.
Well, yes, exactly.
Yes.
If they have the legal entity and the rights, powers, duties and liabilities of a legal person, why cannot our fellow creatures, including bees, enjoy that status?
Absolutely. Now, that's just about our time, Marion, but is it a nice-looking book, nicely illustrated, and where can people access it?
It's not illustrated in the text, but there is a beautiful cover. It's illustrated by Kate Lynch, Honey Bee on Blackberry Flower and Honey Bee on Snowdrop. They're very, really beautiful paintings. And for the legal professional reader, there's a table of cases, a table of statutes referring to legislation in the European Union, Canada and the United States. The book is available from Amazon. Now, it's the equivalent of £51 from Amazon, but £35 direct from the publisher.
Well, that's a big saving, isn't it? I'll put the info on my Facebook page, but just tell us the address where it can be ordered.
The website is www.bees-at-law.co.uk.
Great.
And the author is Noel Sweeney. It was first published this year by Alibi, an imprint of Veritas Chambers.
And it's highly recommended.
It is highly recommended.
Yes.
I mean, there must be many titles on the market on the subject of beekeeping.
Yes.
But this encompasses everything.
Yes. Oh, Marion, it's been lovely talking to you as usual. No doubt we'll be hearing from you on Safe and Sound again.
I hope so. Thank you.
Okay.
Goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye, Marion. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Marion Hassenbachs, the second consecutive program we've had on bees. If you want to hear the first or any of our other programs, there've been more than 100 now, you can go to our Facebook page, Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast, or head over to iTunes and type in Safe and Sound. I see that this week the SPCA has published its list of shame ahead of their annual appeal. The list of shame includes the beating of a Labrador puppy who suffered 2 fractures on his left hind leg, a female dog who was hit 3 times on the head with a hammer, and a cat who was found with the tips of her ears cut off. As shocking and sad as these cases are, there are many other ways that we abuse animals, keeping them confined, denying them their natural behaviours, separating mothers from their babies, to name just a few, are all standard practice in this country. This is also animal cruelty. I'd like to finish with a personal story. This week I was talking to a young man about our food choices and how they affect other animals, and he told me that he prefers to source his own meat. He's a hunter. He said he was brought up on a farm and that as a child he watched his father killing a line of sheep, presumably by cutting their throats, but I didn't ask. Anyway, he noticed how the sheep waiting for their turn went very quiet. He thought it was a kind of resignation to their fate. And as adult, he thought it would be more humane to aim a bullet at the head of an unsuspecting animal. I commended him on his compassion for the sheep, but of course I couldn't share his enthusiasm for hunting. Speaking of which, be sure to keep listening to Safe and Sound. We have a program coming up on hunting, and in particular hunting with crossbows. Next week, though, we'll be discussing pests. I'll put that in between inverted commas. Until then, go well, be kind to the innocent, which just happens to be the name of this track. Mā te wā, see you all next week. Bye-bye.